Let's go ahead and open our Bibles to Leviticus chapter 23, where we will begin at verse 15 in just one moment. The book of Leviticus is a rule book for Levites. It's to help the Levitical tribe, which includes the priests, to know how to do all the different procedures inside the tabernacle and to do it appropriately. It also has lots of rules that the Levites are supposed to pass on to the Israelis as a whole, to help them understand how they should be holy, even as God is holy, to have this holy nation, this royal priesthood, this people of God's own possession sort of attitude as they go forward from Mount Sinai. In chapter number 23, we begin talking about the calendar and how there are certain days that are just special. They are days set aside for a holy convocation, that is, a holy gathering together in honor of God and in thankfulness to God. Now, every week there is a Sabbath day in the Jewish calendar where they are supposed to take the day off, they are not supposed to work, but there's also supposed to be some sort of assembling together for worship and thanksgiving. Beyond that, God goes through several key days in the year that are special holidays, holy days, that a special convocation, a special gathering will take place. And all of these days that we're looking at, or at least majority of them, are somehow tied into the mandatory observances for the adult males that we will see later. These are the days where the adult males who are of holy status, that is, they are ceremonially clean, are supposed to travel to the tabernacle or later to the temple and present themselves on these special convocation days. I think it is prophetically significant that Jesus fulfills quite a few of these days by actions that he takes, first in his ministry and then in the church, and which he will still fulfill in the future. And I think just as he fulfilled the previous ones, the early ones, on the actual calendar date, I think it's very possible he'll fulfill the future ones on the exact calendar date as well. I'll explain a little bit more of that as we get farther into the session today. So we've talked about Passover Day. That's the 14th day of the first Jewish month every spring. That's the day on which the Passover lambs are butchered. That's a significant day. The day after that, the 15th, is the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And that is a special convocation day. That's the day on which the Israelites actually left Egypt. And so it's supposed to be a holiday, no work. 7 days later comes the 21st, which is the last day of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. It also is a convocation day, a day of assembly. Sometime during that week is going to be a first day of the week. And it is on that first day of the week during Passover week, during Feast of Unleavened Bread week, the high priest goes out into the grain fields. In this case, we're talking about barley fields because that's the grain that's ripening at this time of year. Cuts a sheaf, brings it in, and waves it before God as a representation of the beginning of that harvest time. And this is referred to as the first fruits offering. And the way that this prophetically ties in with Jesus is that Jesus was the Passover lamb who was slain on the 14th day of the first Jewish month. He was buried and raised again on the first day of the week during Feast of Unleavened Bread. That'd be the 16th in this particular year. And he becomes the first fruits of those raised from the dead. So Jesus prophetically fulfills those things on the actual days of the Jewish calendar that they represented. Now, the Jewish people, as we read yesterday, were not allowed to harvest any of their grain crop until after that first fruits offering was given. So the day after the feast of first fruits, they were allowed to start harvesting the barley. That brings us then to the next counting up to the next holy convocation day. So this is where we pick up in Leviticus 23:15. You shall also count for yourselves from the day after the Sabbath, from the day when you brought in the sheaf of the wave offering, there shall be 7 complete Sabbaths. So it's the first day of the week, during the middle of Passover week, that is Unleavened Bread week. That first day of the week becomes day 1 of a 7-week count. Verse 16, you shall count 50 days to the day after the 7th Sabbath. Then you shall present a new grain offering to he who is. So this is where we get the phrase Pentecost. Penta being 50, cost being count. So there is a 50-day count that starts counting on the first day of the week that falls during the Feast of Unleavened Bread. 7 weeks later, so it's 49 days, plus the one more day brings us back to another first day of the week. This is Pentecost. Now, the Jewish people seem to have received the Ten Commandments on their first Pentecost. And that is interesting to us because the Pentecost in the New Testament is the day on which the New Covenant was given when the first people were called to believe the gospel. And that's significant prophetic fulfillment there. But for the Jewish people who are receiving these instructions, as they're at Mount Sinai right now still, they are not going to be raising grain just yet. So this is for them once they get into the promised land. They're going to start following these procedures. And they should have started it up probably the next year after they received the Ten Commandments. But unfortunately, because of sin, that will be postponed until they've had 40 years of wilderness wandering. But once they do get into the promised land, this is the procedure they're supposed to follow to identify the next big convocation day, the day of Pentecost. Now, what are they supposed to do on that day? In some respects, it sounds similar, just more expansive than what they did on the day of first fruits. Verse 17, you shall bring in from your dwelling places 2 loaves of bread for a wave offering made of 2/10 of an ephah. There shall be a fine flour baked with leaven as first fruits to he who is. So they take and bake goods. They take some baked goods, probably made from the brand new grain crop, and they present this to God as a sacrifice, a grain offering. Verse 18, along with the bread, you shall present 7 one-year-old male lambs without defect. Now, on the first fruits day during the Feast of Unleavened Bread, it was 1 animal that was offered as a sacrifice. Now we've got 7 lambs that are offered because it's been 7 weeks since they've been working on their barley harvest. But not just those lambs. And a bull of the herd and 2 rams. They are to be a burnt offering to he who is, with their grain offering and their drink offerings, and an offering by fire of a soothing aroma to he who is. You shall offer 1 male goat for a sin offering and 2 male lambs 1 year old for a sacrifice of peace offerings. So they're supposed to be getting themselves back in right standing, or I should say, keep themselves in right standing with God as their year progresses here. Verse number 20, the priests shall then wave them with the bread of the first fruits for a wave offering with 2 lambs before he who is. They are to be holy to he who is for the priest. Now, it's not the lambs that they're raising up before God. It's a portion of the lambs. After they've been butchered, a piece of that is to be presented to God as a symbolic portion of the meal that would be eaten on Pentecost. Verse 21, on this same day you shall make a proclamation as well. You are to have a holy convocation, so an assembly. You shall do no laborious work. So even though it's the first day of the week, it's to be a non-work day. So they basically get 2 days in a row during Pentecost off. They get the Sabbath, which is the seventh Sabbath since Passover time, and they get the Pentecost day off as well. It is to be a perpetual statute in all your dwelling places throughout your generations. Now, this is the spring feasts, as we refer to them, because they happen during the springtime, which Jesus fulfilled first by his death and his resurrection, and then by the sending of his Holy Spirit in power to establish the new covenant on Pentecost 7 weeks later. So we know that those days were fulfilled exactly on the day of the calendar that they were given. And so fulfillment comes in connection with the calendar, which makes me suspect that the remaining mandatory feast, which is the Feast of Tabernacles, and its associated holy days are very possibly going to take place on the calendar date that they fall in association with the second coming of Jesus. I'll again explain a little bit more of that as the farther along I go here. Verse 22, when you reap the harvest of your land, because the barley harvest goes from Passover up through the time right before Pentecost. Then Pentecost comes along, and the day after Pentecost, offerings are offered. That's when the wheat harvest begins, because wheat ripens later than barley. So now we've got all of the grain harvest as a whole being thought of, from barley all the way through wheat harvest. When you reap the harvest of your land, moreover, you shall not reap to the very corners or edges of your field, nor gather the gleanings of your harvest. You are to leave them for the needy and the alien. I am he who is your God. So here's a reminder of something we saw earlier. The working poor have dibs on the surrounding area of every single grain field. The rabbinical tradition that comes up later, so I can't say for sure this is the standard they used in ancient times, but the rabbinical standard was basically one sweep of a hand sickle in from the edge is where you actually started your reaping when you owned the grain field. So you left a whole fringe around the outside of each one of your independent grain fields. And once you were finished with that field and then moved on, the working poor could come in and start cutting that for themselves to use for their own purposes. They could store some of it up to get through the year, or they might be able to sell it and get the cash equivalent to get them through. Now, it wasn't just simply the edge of the field. It was also the gleanings. That means when you're making your little hand sheaves, if you drop some on the ground, you were not supposed to pick those up. You just wrap up what was in your hand, put that on the pile. Anything on the ground, the poor people get that when they come through. If you're loading up your cart and you somehow miss some of the little sheaves that you put together, which would be easy to do because they're the same color as the ground. So if you left anything and you noticed, oh, I didn't load that up, too bad. You left it, and a poor person would be able to claim that sheaf for themselves as they came through. Something similar would happen in the trees as well, and the vines, and we've talked about that before. But the idea was this was a social support program for the working poor. And we see it very well illustrated in the book of Ruth, where Boaz actually kind of gets infatuated with Ruth and even makes his workers drop things on purpose so that she could pick it up as one of the working poor members of the gleaning society. And it's just a great story. I love the book of Ruth. Now, back to this. Verse 23. Again, he who is spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the sons of Israel, saying, in the seventh month, on the first of the month, you shall have a rest, a reminder by the blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. You shall not do any laborious work, but you shall present an offering by fire to he who is." Now, the first day of every month was a special day. But on the first day of the seventh month, it wasn't just simply a day off. It was a special day off that included getting together with others. It was a holy convocation. And this was actually the beginning of the agricultural year, because it was at this time all the harvests were completed, and you would be able to bring, as we will read later, your tithe from all of those harvests and present it to the Lord in association with the Feast of Tabernacles. And then once you were done with the Feast of Tabernacles, you would pretty much start the cycle of agriculture over again with the preparing of your fields and the preparing of your vineyards for another year's produce. So, this is referred to as the Feast of Trumpets. And it is my suspicion, I am not making a prophecy here, folks. I am not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. It is my suspicion, based upon my Bible study, that the last trumpet of the book of Revelation, the last trumpet that Paul talks about in his writings, will occur on the first day of the seventh Jewish month in the year that Jesus returns. And that this will be the trumpet of the Lord that will call the righteous dead into their new bodies and the living believers into their new bodies, and they will be caught up together to meet the Lord in the air on this particular day on the calendar. That's my suspicion. Now, it is followed in the book of Revelation, by the way, the second coming of Jesus, with the wedding feast of the Lamb. And the traditional wedding feast amongst the Jewish people was about 7 days long. And so I think it's possible that on this theoretical calendar I'm telling you about from the book of Revelation, that after the trumpet and the resurrection and transformation and the rapture or the catching away of the saints takes place on the first day of the seventh month, that days 2 through 8, that is the next 7 days, would be set aside for the wedding feast of the Lamb. Basically, a great big get-together between ourselves and our loved ones and all the ancients that we've read so much about, and Jesus Christ, and just celebrating the resurrection and gathering together of the saints. That's my guess. And then, on the 10th day of that seventh month, I believe we'll come to the fulfillment of the next thing we read about in Leviticus 23, which is Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. Verse 26, "He who is spoke to Moses, saying, on exactly the 10th day of this seventh month is the Day of Atonement." And in Hebrew, what you read there in the text is Yom, which is day, Kippur, which is atonement. "It shall be a holy convocation for you," that's an assembly, "and you shall humble your souls and present an offering by fire to he who is." Now, humble your souls in the context that we're reading here means to fast, to go without food. So we are in the habit of referring to so many of these things as the festivals or the feasts of the Lord. But Yom Kippur is not a day of feasting. It is a day of fasting. It is a day of reflection somberly. Verse 28, you shall not do any work on this same day, for it is a day of atonement, to make atonement on your behalf before he who is your God. If there is any person who will not humble himself in this same day, he shall be cut off from his people. So it is a capital crime not to take this day seriously, according to Leviticus. As for any person who does any work on this day, that person I will destroy from among my people. You shall not do any work at all. It is to be a perpetual statute throughout your generations in all your dwelling places. Now keep in mind, we are reading the law given by God to the Israelis. These things are not in force for the people of the church. But I want you to just appreciate my language here is as if I were living in the time that this was giving and I was talking to Israelis. It is to be a Sabbath of complete rest to you. You shall humble your souls on the ninth of the month at evening. So that's the tail end of the ninth, because remember, Jewish days begin at sunset and therefore end at sunset. So on the ninth of the month at evening, from evening until evening, you shall keep your Sabbath. So this is the day of Yom Kippur, which we've seen other places. This is the only day in which the high priest actually enters the Holy of Holies and puts blood on the Ark of the Covenant. And it is a lesson that is taught that if you are not covered by the blood of the Lamb, if you have not been atoned for by God's provision, then you must pay for your sins with your own blood, with your own life. And so it is my contention. It is my teaching. Now, it's all theoretical. It is based on my Bible understanding and not upon some sort of prophecy that I want to make. It is my belief that Yom Kippur is the day on which the Battle of Armageddon will take place. Because effectively, the Battle of Armageddon is when, in Revelation chapter 19, Jesus shows up as King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and he deals with all of those who are camped out next to Jerusalem in the split mountain valley where the Mount of Olives splits in association with his coming. And this bunch who have taken the mark of the beast and living under the beast leadership, they are there to try to stop him from coming as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. They are effectively refusing to humble themselves under his hand. They are refusing to be atoned for by his blood, and therefore they will pay with their own blood for their own sin. And I think that's why prophetically it makes good sense that Yom Kippur in the year of Jesus' return will be the day on which the Battle of Armageddon takes place. But that brings us then to the mandatory attendance festival of the Feast of Tabernacles, which is mentioned in the book of Zechariah, chapter number 14, in association with the millennium. And so I think that it's a very good association with, once we arrive at this date on the calendar, it becomes the annual gathering together in Zechariah 14, for everybody acknowledging that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords and coming to thank him for his leadership. So Leviticus 23, verse 33, again, he who is spoke to Moses saying, speak to the sons of Israel saying, on the 15th day of this seventh month is the Feast of Booths for 7 days to he who is. Feast of Booths, Feast of Tabernacles is just interchanged. On the first day is a holy convocation. You shall do no laborious work of any kind. So the first day, the 15th, is a gathering day. For 7 days you shall present an offering by fire to he who is. On the eighth day, now that would be the 22nd, so it's a little different than it is for Feast of Unleavened Bread. On the eighth day, the 22nd, you shall offer, have a holy convocation and present an offering by fire to he who is. It is an assembly. You shall do no laborious work. So, 7:15, day off, gathering together. It's the beginning of the Feast of Unleavened or Feast of Tabernacles. 22nd day, it's the wrap-up period, and it's also a day off. Nobody works. That was actually the day on which there was a water ceremony, which I don't have time to go into right now. Maybe we'll do it tomorrow at the very beginning recap. But it's the water ceremony that Jesus was at Jerusalem for when he called out and said, anybody that's thirsty needs to come to me, and I will be able to provide him so much spiritual water of life coming out of him that it'll just be an amazing thing. So that happens on the 22nd every year. Verse 37, these are the appointed times of he who is, which you shall proclaim as holy convocations, to present offerings by fire to he who is, burnt offerings and grain offerings, sacrifices and drink offerings, each day's matter on its own days, besides those of the Sabbaths of he who is, and besides your gifts, and besides all your votive and free will offerings which you give to he who is. So the summary verses there, 37, 38, is basically these are the mandatory assembly days every year on the calendar. You've got the weekly Sabbath that should have an assembly attached to it. You've got first day of unleavened bread, the 15th of the first month. You've got the 21st of the first day of the first month. That's the end of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. You've got Pentecost, that is one of the assembly days. You've got the Feast of Trumpets, that's one of the assembly days. You've got Yom Kippur, which is one of the assembly days. And you've got the Feast of Unleavened Bread that kicks off on the 15th of the seventh month and wraps up on the 22nd of the seventh month, both having special assembly days attached to them. And these are the times when all the adult males who are ceremonially clean are supposed to present themselves before he who is. And they come bearing the sacrifices that we've been talking about here. Well, we're out of time, but I've got more to talk to you about tomorrow when we get back into the Word.